This is Great FM, a podcast series by Great HR, produced by Timber Media.
Hello, lovely people of Great FM. How are you doing? I'm your host, Ahalya, and I'm super excited to get into today's conversation because it has to do with one of my favorite things to talk about in the HR world. It's not an easy topic to unpack, but we're going to attempt it either way. I'm talking about culture. Until about a decade ago, we'd hear people talk about culture, I think, pretty loosely, right? This is how we do things around here, or that's just our culture. But it really isn't like that anymore. If we're being honest, in fact, it cannot be like that anymore. Culture has become a business imperative, a strategic lever, and a competitive advantage in the post-COVID world. And with it, employee value proposition. And because of this recent evolution, it is a challenging process as well. So today, we're breaking down what it takes to build strong culture and EVP, employee value proposition, in a dynamic work environment like the one we live in today. Helping us with said breakdown is Sulbha Rai, Chief People Officer, Renew By. Welcome, Sulbha. Thank you so much for joining us. How are you?
Hi, Ahalya. Thank you so much for the invite, and I'm feeling great. And what a lovely topic and a pertinent one in times like this.
Yeah, absolutely. So in fact, can we start off where I left in my intro, this whole post-COVID angle, right? Has this focus on culture and EVP really accelerated because of everything we collectively went through during the pandemic? You know, I think what we went through was a lot and it was unprecedented and it changed the world as we know it. Or do you think there have been other factors that have made culture such a priority for leaders and employees in today's world?
So Ahalya, I think, you know, while EVPs always existed, but what pandemic did was it did not create it, it actually exposed it. And that was a time when people were really questioning, does my organization genuinely care about me? Am I being supported beyond just the productivity matrix that's getting measured? And how are my leaders responding while they say, you know, we care for people and our people are important? They wanted to know whether the leadership is actually transparent and actually empathetic to their needs, to, you know, what they're going through. And it was beyond just a poster. It was about living the experience. So I think COVID, I don't know about it accelerating EVP, but really exposing it. And now employees going through the tough time have really shifted their focus from just work and output to maybe meaning, flexibility, psychological safety. I mean, something which is beyond just the compensation. And EVP is, again, not just something that is discussed internally or just spoken during recruitment. I think employees are really expressing and amplifying their voices across various platforms. And you rightly mentioned that it is not just an HR initiative. It is a competitive differentiator. Now people want to work with organization which has to offer beyond just a role or a compensation.
Yeah, I really like the word you used there, exposed it, right? Because I think before COVID, a lot of employees within workplaces were, I think, already dealing with the problems of poor culture and poor EVP, right? So post-COVID and this exposure, like you said, really has given people a voice to make changes in the workplace and also given HR, I think, and businesses a chance to do something different. And that brings me to the question about business strategy in general. We've talked a lot on this podcast, Sulbha, about how HR has now got this very important seat at the business table, right? It's landed there in the C-suite, driving business and also setting business goals. Do you think building culture and EVP has sort of been one of the biggest reasons HR has been invited into that conversation?
Absolutely. This has really been an HR's inflection point. I use one word very frequently and I keep saying, bande se hi dhanda hai. So, you know, HR has deep understanding of people and how to drive people, what drives people. And today, culture impacts everything. It's omnivorous and it's something which is felt. But I can tell you, and you know, there are enough and more studies which talks about it, that culture directly impacts your revenue productivity. It directly impacts your attrition cost, your customer experience, your brand equity, and even the speed at which you want to make any change in the organization or any transformation you want to do. So when companies understand the impact of engagement, you know, you can see how many matrices of business are positively getting influenced. So HR definitely becomes central to a lot of business outcomes. And just to quote one of the articles, and it says that high growth companies, if 80% of the frontline employees are not meeting the targets, the solution is not only performance management. It is training architecture, role clarity, specialization, identity, leadership capability, and all of this is actually linked. And you can see a direct correlation of HR, which connects to literally EBITDA, productivity, or retention economics. And that's why I say that it is absolutely non-negotiable. Businesses who understand the impact, they don't take HR as a tick box. They think of HR as very strategic partners. And if HR speaks the language of business, that's when they make the most impact.
No, I think that's very right. What you said, especially at the end, you know, when HR speaks the language of business and we're also contributing so heavily to it by building good and strong culture, right? So let's move into some specifics. Sulbha, if you could, I think people always believe in numbers, right? If they don't believe in anything else, they believe in numbers. So could you give us some facts or figures, even just examples and stories that you've witnessed, right, as an HR leader to demonstrate what happens when companies get culture and EVP right? And then we'll dive into what happens when they don't get it right.
So let me give you very pointed, specific examples, and I think it will be simpler for you and the audience to understand. When company is getting the culture and the EVP right, you will always see the attrition is reduced, especially the regrettable attrition. Some attrition will obviously happen, so don't hold me back for that. We are only talking about the regrettable attrition. When your culture is right, you will ensure your people have a lot of lateral and cross-functional movement. So internal mobility increases because the people see the future. Your hiring cost will drop because people, when they take pride, they do a lot of referrals. So they will get their friends in the organization. So you'll see a lot of hiring costs getting dropped. You will find your social media ratings on Glassdoor or LinkedIn, on Google, improve because the employees become your brand ambassador. And you automatically hire great talent because when you hear people saying great things, you know, that's when you're automatically reducing any effort in doing branding of your organization. And when the culture is right, people take pride in what they are doing, the organization they belong, they obviously deliver exceptional products, exceptional service, and the end outcome for a business, be a customer, you know, or a kind of a service or anything or a product that you're creating, will obviously be of a great quality, and people or the end user will feel the difference. So when people are proud to work, you know, they'll voluntarily talk about their workplaces. So that's something, you know, companies get right if they are really nurturing a great culture. And the reverse of that, what you ask when they don't, when companies get it wrong, you know, you may, no matter how fancy your office is or how great posters you put in terms of your values, etc., they will just remain words. They will never translate into actions and behaviors. Leaders will behave inconsistently. They will demonstrate absolute opposite of what you want. And you will observe a lot of quiet quitting, you know. And if an organization is nurturing a poor culture, politics, etc., these middle managers will become bottlenecks. Your decision making will become very slow. And you'll always find such organizations are disproportionately spending their time on hiring and firing. So a cultural misalignment can be extremely expensive for the organization who is not getting right. And they will lose a lot of not only their credibility, but they will never be able to attract great talent. They will find it difficult to, you know, keep the talent. And ultimately, the business matrices will reflect that. So culture is either a performance multiplier or literally like a silent tax that you pay. So that's really what I feel.
No, absolutely. I really love all of the phrasing because it's hitting the spot, honestly, Sulva. You know, silent tax that you have to pay, these hidden costs that people just don't realize they are paying till the bill is due, right? I think one of the biggest issues that arises in this regard, however, is this idea of generic versus specific and credible, right? And we've had a conversation around employee value proposition on the series before, and this was a problem that came up then as well, and I think we're repeating it now because it hasn't actually been solved. What are the strategies that can help culture teams build a differentiated EVP framework, right? If you could just give us a step-by-step breakdown of one, whether you think this is an important priority, that it should be differentiated, and if it should be differentiated, how exactly do you go about doing that? Because surely some benefits have to be, you know, across the board, right? So how do you stand out from the rest?
Very good question, actually. And it actually needs a lot of delving thinking around it. And like I said, EVP is extremely important. It is not just about a poster, it is about an experience. So it cannot really be a copy-paste approach. You like some words here, you like some words there, and just use it. That doesn't work in a real scenario. When organizations are thinking of an EVP, I think the step one would be to begin with the end in mind. What is the kind of organization you really want to become? And have something like a mid-year kind of a thing of 3 to 5 years of a horizon, if not long term, at least a mid-term. And then break it down. If that's the end state we want to achieve in 3 to 5 years, what kind of people do we want? What kind of behaviors will lead us to achieve that? And also call out what behaviors we should not demonstrate. So I think must have and must not have should be clearly defined. And again, everything should also link to the business. And I'm very conscious of that because these behaviors are not done in isolation. Every good behavior or a bad behavior has a very direct impact on people, their performance, and at the end of the day, the business outcome. So step number one would be just begin with the end in the mind. Step number two is when you're in the process of creating an EVP, please do a reality check. Look at your data first. Understand your attrition data, the reason, and don't go just by some pointers that would have come. Dig deeper. At least in our organization, when we were doing something, we went back and created a group which went back and connected with people who had left 6 months back. And we wanted to know the real reason of their leaving. Sometimes they would just say better opportunity. That may not really be the reason. So, do the diagnosis with the right intention. Look at your engagement insights. What is something which people are happy about? Have detailed analysis of your performance patterns. What kind of people, and get more specific into their demographics, and not just the demographics, the various elements in terms of their way of interaction, their way of dealing, their competence in terms of how do they behave in times of stress, and then times of great performance, poor performance, and stuff like that, difficulty. So that kind of assessment. So those reality checks are extremely important. And the next step could be, involve more people. It can't be an HR document. It is not an HR exercise. It's about leadership coming together and behaving like an owner. So, and everyone needs to come on a common page, common understanding, because ultimately, if somebody doesn't, agree, or those things don't resonate with them, no matter how much you say, we respect people, and if that is not demonstrated, it's no point having you as your EVP, right? So, leaders need to model behaviors, otherwise your credibility will collapse. And then I think it's all about translating this into experience. Like I said, it can't be just a document. It is all about your actions, your behaviors, your conversations, your connections that translate at every employee life cycle, right from the recruitment to onboarding to recognition to growth or exit. It should be consistent. And finally, I think we should always have brand ambassadors. We need to build champions, because until and unless you have culture carriers, it is very difficult to embody those things in an organization. So it's important that you have influencers, you have champions, you need to recognize them so that they continue to amplify. And culture also, spreads through the proximity, how frequently you are meeting, you're talking. And like I said, they can't be just mere words. They have to be demonstrable actions. And finally, I think one step of enforcing your EVP or your culture is about talking about these stories. It's not about slogans, it's all about stories. How, your people are feeling, your customers are feeling, how your leaders are building credibility. When you talk about real stories, I think that again accentuates your authenticity. So that's, I think, few steps that one can think about while building, nurturing, and living those EVPs for an organization.
Perfect. So, Baba, there's one thing there that you briefly touched upon that I think we need to unpack even further, which is that EVP and culture. I think the reason buy-in is often so difficult is because it is so experiential, right? It's very much like a proof is in the pudding kind of thing. And if you don't get that buy-in, it's very difficult for the proof to be generated. And if the proof isn't generated, you don't get the buy-in. It's like a catch-22. So I want to understand, how is HR and how should HR teams really aim to close the gap between policies and experience, right? And how can HR leaders and managers actually drive this change and get that buy-in, not just from the leadership, but also from the employees that participate in the workforce?
Sure. So I keep saying that, the HR is the first salesperson of the organization, because we are the first ambassadors to even interact with the candidate. So we can't be really superficial. We really need to, lead by example, if I can use that word. They need to ensure that, their conversations are extremely authentic. And when people are coming into the organization, they're prepping the managers also, or the other team members also, to ensuring that we are giving a very consistent experience to the new joinee. It's like a new person, coming to your place, and how you want to make them feel. And as HR being the custodian, they have to take the responsibility of immediately looking into if there is any kind of a friction, quickly solve for it. If there are questions, respond to them in a timely manner. If there are any apprehensions, address them. And it should be, where HR is proactively listening and not just dictating. I think that's when, great communication is not about talking. Great communication is all about listening. The more we listen and understand, 80% of the problems get solved there itself. So, for example, if a policy is saying, there is flexibility, but if a manager is punishing that, then the culture will collapse, right? So HR has to be continuously build that bridge between the policies and the experience and ensure that that leadership behavior is demonstrated. So while HR can obviously create a lot of frameworks and policies, but actually people on the ground need to deliver the culture. And HR has a lot of role in ensuring that everybody in the organization is equipped, is understanding and delivering that experience to people.
Fantastic. I think that's a really good analysis of what has to be done in order to get that buy-in. Can't have any conversation really today and for the foreseeable future, Sulva, without bringing up the two letters AI. And the reason that I want to talk about this is because I think a large focus of any company is always to scale and to grow, right? But oftentimes what ends up getting damaged is just collateral damage is culture. So talk to me a little bit about how HR teams are using AI. Generally, when it comes to culture building and EVP, how's AI sort of playing a part there?
So I'm a big proponent of, AI, and I feel AI is always an enabler. It improves speed, it improves efficiency, and it improves our decision quality. But AI does not create culture. So the culture is built on trust. I think it's built on emotional intelligence, fairness, inclusion, and of course, human conversations. So when organizations are investing in skill building or any new structure or digital tools, employee interpret is, wow, my company is investing in my future. And that reinforces a positive culture. I don't see that AI will do human-led, intervention. So I certainly don't think AI is going to be a risk. The risk is only when you are doing something without properly communicating, I think, and that you can't blame on an AI. I think if a change is happening or new automations are happening, I think the way it needs to be implemented in the organization, the way it impacts people, needs to be clearly articulated. I think that's when the acceptability, that's when adoption becomes better. And then it is not seen as a threat. And I feel when any organization is trying to bring, and a lot of times people think, oh, AI is coming, my job is going to go away. I think where the organization needs to see is, hey, we want to introduce AI, and we want to upskill you and want to make your work better, faster, sharper, and you should get equipped to do it better. I think when the conversations is all about helping the employee, the change becomes far more easier. And if the transformation that an organization is trying to do is transparent, is inclusive, and is capability focused, your culture will automatically strengthen. But if you're just being very secretive about it, you make it like an abrupt change, and if it is only one-way communication, then obviously your culture will erode. I think we should always look at how technology is going to scale operations and how human behavior is going to sustain culture. That's really my two bits here, and I really don't see AI as a threat. I always see it as an enabler. Was only going to make our work easier, better, and will give more time for human connections and conversations.
Absolutely. I think that was a great summary of the position we find ourselves in. And I kind of want to take the conversation back to, when we were talking about the subjective nature of culture and EVP. I think another big issue or sometimes a big problem that creeps up is these things are very felt. So how do we quantitatively measure culture and EVP? Do you have any thoughts or suggestions on how HR teams and professionals should go about doing that?
I think a lot of times culture teams find it very difficult to, sometimes measure their own effectiveness. But I think there are both quantitative as well as qualitative indicators. If I have to give you an example, while people eat right food and go to gym and they see a progress in terms of their muscle mass, etc. But there are also a lot of softer or hidden elements like the blood culture and your internal parameters. And
Yeah.
that's really what culture is. It's all about visible and invisible indicators. So if I have to talk about the visible indicators, they are like something like a voluntary attrition rate, regrettable attrition, your lateral mobility numbers, what is the average tenure of your people, how's your employee referral rate, engagement scores, of course, and employee ratings on various social media platforms. These are really very qualitative. You can measure day in and day out. However, I also feel that one should also look at some of the qualitative indicators, and that's very visible. And that's something which HR can really pick it up. How's the energy on your floor? How engaged people are? How cross team collaboration is happening? What is the quality of the conversation between team members and managers? How people, you do a lot of events at office. How are people, expressing that on internally or externally? And do teams operate in silo, or as simple as taking a tea break in silos, or are they just, cross teams just working together, having a relaxed moments? These are very qualitative indicators, and they talk about, how people are operating. And you can also look at some of the long-term health indicators for an organization, like, how many homegrown leaders you have, how many people have risen through the ranks and have taken larger responsibilities over the period of time. Every organization goes through some tough time. Look at your numbers, look at your people, how many people stayed with you in those tough times. That really talks about the culture. Also, think about what is your speed of decision making. Does it take forever? Are you agile? Are you proactive? How are you responding to the needs of the customer, the market? So you can just figure out these are some of these things, which actually talk about how you're doing in terms of creating a great organization culture. If people stay, grow, refer others, and advocate, I think your culture is working. That's an awesome indicator.
Absolutely. And I think another, corollary of what you just brought up there is that culture impacts these things, right? It impacts engagement, it impacts attrition, it impacts retention. So look at those very data-driven metrics to inform how well or how poorly your culture is performing, because it's right there, right in front of you. We've reached the end of the conversation. I do have to wrap up, but I do have one last question for you, and that is, what do you think is the biggest challenge for HR teams in today's work environment? I think there are many, but I'd love to hear from you when it comes to building culture and fleshing out EVP.
I think the one of the biggest challenge for us is, when words just become poster and not a practice. So if your values are not demonstrated in daily interactions, and especially by the leaders, your culture becomes cynical. So nobody is going to trust you. And HR cannot be the sole custodian of culture. The biggest challenge is really walking the talk. If you say respect is part of your culture, leaders have to ensure that they're listening without interrupting. If you say, transparency is part of your culture, you cannot be holding information which is important for the people. And if, for example, if you say meritocracy is my culture, you can't be showing any kind of favoritism. So, and people are smart. They notice the gaps immediately. And, people are able to see very quickly, if there is a gap in what they say and what they do. So, I think the biggest challenge is really delivering the message beyond the words. The real challenge is consistency of what you're saying, consistently demonstrating that, and everyone living those values and not doing it, like I said, as a few lines and just talking only in town halls, but in everyday interactions, in every meeting, in every email, in every conversation, your culture should speak out through actions, behaviors, and decisions. So that's really the challenge of what you say and what you deliver, what you commit, and what people are experiencing. Culture cannot be built in a town hall, and it has to be built in everyday behavior. So that's really the challenge, because changing a behavior is the most difficult thing, and especially adults. So that's really the biggest challenge. And if an organization is able to do that, champion it, they have really achieved it.
Absolutely. Because I also think trust is essentially consistency, right? At the end of the day, you have to walk the talk, and that is the only thing that will get your employees and professionals in the organization to trust you. And trust goes a very, very long way. I don't think anything replaces that as of now. Thank you so much, Sulva, for your time and for walking us through this. Some really valuable insights have come out of the conversation. I'm sure they'll really help our listeners. So thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you so much. Lovely talking to you. I enjoyed responding to your questions. So thank you so much for the opportunity.
Absolutely. We'll catch on another episode of Great FM, everybody. But until then, stay safe and stay happy. Hope you took a lot of insights away from this one. Talk soon.
This is Great FM, a podcast series by Great HR. Produced by Timber Media.